Svati Deve Gauravani Paterni Nirvasesis Nivadi Paskachade Sitarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Hun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagarvatam Sagana Raghunatham Tam Sajiva Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Larita Sri Vishakam Vikamscha Panchakalpa Chubhischa Kripa Sindhya Bhata Padichanam Pavanevya Vaishnavegri Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya August 3rd, 2015, Skype Plus over Hilo, Hawaii. And we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Vidura's Talks with Maitreya, Text 16. Savishva Janma Stiti Samyamarte. Chakarakaman Yati Purushani Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kindly chant all those superhuman transcendental activities of the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead, who accepted incarnations fully equipped with all potency for the full manifestation and maintenance of the cosmic creation. Purport. Vidura was undoubtedly very eager to hear about Lord Krishna in particular, but he was overwhelmed because Lord Krishna had just passed away from the visible world. He therefore wanted to hear about him in his Purusha incarnations, which he manifests with full potencies for the creation and maintenance of the cosmic world. The activities of the Purusha incarnations are but an extension of the activities of the Lord. This hint was given by Vidura to Maitreya, because Maitreya could not decide which part of the activities of Lord Krishna should be chanted. Savishva Janma Stiti Samyamarte Krita Vatara Pragrihita Shakti Chakara Kamanyati Purushani Yanishvara Kirtayatani Mayam. Kindly chant all those superhuman activities of the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead, who accepted incarnations fully equipped with all potency for the full manifestation and maintenance of the cosmic creation. So here Vidura has been glorifying in general Hari Katha, Krishna Katha, talking about Krishna, how wonderful it is. And certainly Vidura, being an associate directly of Krishna, wanted to hear directly about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, Vidura's association with Krishna was in Mathura, Dwarka, Hastinapur, but still Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan. But here he's asking for the Purusha incarnations. He's asking for talks about Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, Kshiradakshai Vishnu for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. And one might ask, well, why isn't he asking about talks of Krishna in Hastinapur, talks of Krishna in Dwarka? So Prabhupada explains very nicely in this purport that Maitreya might have been a little confused about where to start. I mean, even in our life right now, if I were to go to any of you and say, hey, tell me something about Krishna, well, that's a pretty big request. You don't know, you know, what am I asking for? Am I asking for Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna in Mathura, and Dwarka, and Hastinapur? Am I asking for other incarnations, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tistan Nanavatar Makarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Bharma Puranyo. I'm asking for Ramchandra, Varaha, Matsya, Kurma, Nisingadev. What am I asking for? Am I asking for talks about the devotees, Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Draupadi? You know, am I asking for how Krishna's in the world, that he's the sun and the moon and the heat and fire? What am I asking for? I'm asking for some philosophy of reincarnation. We're not this body. I mean, tell me something about Krishna. It goes on and on and on and on and on. So what determines, because we're told already, Harikatha. We should always engage in Harikatha. Of course, we have our ordinary business in the world. Srila Prabhupada, when he was a grihastha and head of a pharmaceutical firm, it's not that to every single customer all the time he just said, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Like when Mahaprabhu and his associates were cleaning the Gundicha temple, they asked for everything just by saying Krishna. Instead of saying, would you please pass a broom? Would you please give me the water? They indicated in some other way what they wanted. Like I have a young grandson who can't talk yet, and he indicates what he wants without language. So they indicated in some other way what they wanted, and then their language was just Krishna, Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada certainly didn't do that when he was running a pharmaceutical business. Neither did he do that as the head of ISKCON. He would talk about, all right, how are we going to get the book sales or the temple? So that's certainly about Krishna, but not quite in the same sense that we think about Harikatha. You know, he's sitting around talking about the bank accounts of the temple. Again, we don't generally think of that as Harikatha, although certainly it is. So in what sense did he want Harikatha? What was he asking for? Yeah, I just like sometimes as a teacher and a college professor, so the students have to write a paper. They have to do some research, they have to write their dissertation, and you'll ask them for a topic. So they'll often give you a really big topic, the importance of education to devotees, or why devotees stay in the movement, or something like that. And you'll generally, they ask a topic that's too big, and you say to them, you need to narrow it down. You're just writing a 4,000-word paper or a 2,000-word paper. You've got to make it a little narrow. So in the same way here, Vidura is making it by a hint, Prabhupada said. He's making it a little narrow. Now, you might ask why he's doing that. Why not just say to Maitreya, well, give me Harikatha, just pick anywhere. After all, Prabhupada will talk about how it's sweet anywhere. Prabhupada talks about the Bhagavatam like that. He says how the Bhagavatam is sweet anywhere, and yet one should study it systematically. Now, that doesn't mean one should always study it systematically, but the point is that it is sweet anywhere. So Vidura could have said to Maitreya, just give me Harikatha, anything. But Maitreya still had to pick something. He had to start somewhere. What is he going to talk about? Philosophy? Is he going to talk about Leela? What is he going to do? Which incarnation? Which whatever? And so how do we decide? And we're told always talk about Krishna Katha. Always. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Always talk about Krishna. Always talk about the pastimes of the Lord. Always hear the pastimes of the Lord. But which ones? So we're going to look at what's our criteria for choosing. How do we choose? How do the great devotees choose what parts of Harikatha, what aspect of Harikatha they're going to speak about or listen to at any particular time? So one consideration is the individual's own personal mood. And of course, this consideration applies specifically to those who've awakened their particular mood, which is certainly the case for a person like Vidura. So if a person has a particular mood, a particular rasa with Krishna that's begun to awaken or is fully awakened, then one will especially like to hear about Krishna's pastimes in that mood. One will particularly like to hear about Krishna's pastimes in that place. So although everything is wonderful, Srila Prabhupada will often say that the Vrindavan devotees, they want to hear about all of Krishna's pastimes. The gopis talk about Ramchandra killing Bali right? And in the evening, the residents of Vrindavan have entertainment that's often about all of Krishna's incarnations. Mother Yasoda is telling Krishna stories about Ramachandra and stories about Nrisingadev and so forth. Still, they generally like to hear stories about Krishna in their particular mood. So the gopis like to hear about Krishna's romantic activities, and the cowherd boys like to hear about Krishna's playful activities, and the elderly gopis and gopas like to hear about Krishna's childish activities and so forth. And the residents of Vaikuntha like to hear about Krishna's godly activities, just like when Gopakumara started calling Narayana Gopal. And some of the residents didn't like that. They said, well, yeah, you know, he acts like a cowherd boy sometimes, but that's not really what we talk about here. We talk about his majestic activities. So depending on one's mood, right, if one is a devotee of Nrisingadev, one wants to particularly hear pastimes of Nrisingadev. So that depends on one's particular mood. Of course, as we said, the devotees like to hear about everything. The Goswamis describe that Radharani and her friends, they're also getting news of Krishna's playing with the cowherd boys. And they're also enjoying that. It's not that they don't enjoy all of that, but specifically, they want to relish their own particular mood. So that's there. And then, of course, it's the mood of the person that you're with. So that's also a consideration among the advanced devotees. So if there's some mixing of moods, then certain things will not be discussed. So if there are some people in the mood of parental love and some people in the mood of conjugal love, so they're not going to discuss intimate conjugal activities, just like even in this world, right? You don't discuss your intimate conjugal activities usually with people who are in parental mood. It's just, you know, just doesn't done, or just with people who are your friends, or it's a little awkward. So that's also there. What is the other person's mood? Just like Mother Yasoda is waking up Krishna in the morning. In fact, this is around, it's 6:21 in the morning now here in Hawaii, and this is around the time that Mother Yasoda is waking up Krishna. And as is described by Sanatana Goswami in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when she wakes him up, she sees indications that he was out all night dancing with the young maidens. But she doesn't interpret them like that. She interprets the dirt on his body and so forth as meaning that he didn't take a proper bath the night before, because as far as she's concerned, he's been in bed all night. And there are some young gopis in the room, and they don't reveal to Krishna's mother what was going on. They're just simply a little embarrassed, hoping she's not going to find out. So it depends on the mood of the people involved. And then, of course, it also depends on their level. So if one has not yet awakened one's relationship with Krishna, then one is generally hearing in a more general way. It won't be that specific, but still one has one's personal taste, as Prabhupada says in the Nectar Devotion. One still may have one's taste about what activities one enjoys hearing about Krishna. But it's according to one's level, one also has to hear. So Srila Prabhupada cautioned many, many, many times that we shouldn't imitate the sahajiyas who only want to hear about Rasa Lila, even though they haven't awakened their mood in a genuine way. They're just imitating. Because even those who are on the conjugal level will like to hear other pastimes. What to speak of those who are simply neophyte? So on the beginning level, one talks in a very general way, just there is a God, and God is a person, and we're not this body, and there's reincarnation and things of that nature. And there's also the level of the people involved. So if there is a mix of levels, generally we speak on the lower level, although there may be some indications on the higher level. You don't want to never speak of the higher levels, because a person has to know what to aspire for. At the same time, the talk is mostly going to be at the lowest common denominator. So there has to be some adjustment according to who's speaking with whom. And, you know, again, Srila Prabhupada talked about higher things in his classes. But you find that most of Srila Prabhupada's talk on higher things is in his purports, which I find quite interesting. I mean, some people really prefer to read Prabhupada's books, and some people really prefer to listen to Prabhupada's lectures. But I find that if you do both, you get a really complete picture So in the purports throughout Prabhupada's books, you will find really everything on all levels and in all moods. As Prabhupada talks about, a pharmacy shop where there's a medicine for everyone. However, in Srila Prabhupada's lectures, he generally speaks at a lower level than he does throughout his books. So there's many, many things in his books that Prabhupada either never or rarely or only indirectly discusses in his lectures. I mean, even on Radhastami, there's a Radhastami lecture where Prabhupada doesn't say a word about Srimati Radharani until the very end of the lecture. He's just speaking in a very general way. So it really depends also on the level of the people who's involved, the person who's speaking, the person who's hearing, the other people in the audience. Otherwise, one can commit the offense on chanting of speaking above somebody's level. And if you speak too high above somebody's level, then the person may lose faith and they may commit offenses. At the same time, you don't want to speak too low and people will not be getting the nourishment that they need. And this consideration can be really a challenge when you have a very mixed audience. This is one of the big challenges of writing for Back to Godhead magazine, because we have an audience that spans the whole spectrum of levels. And it's also a real challenge often when giving a public talk and you have some people who are new and some people who are very wise and advanced in Krishna consciousness. Of course, the very expert speaker of Krishna Katha, of Hari Katha, can speak in such a way that everyone becomes nourished. And certainly Srila Prabhupada did that. We find that Prabhupada's lectures, even when the literal content, technically speaking, is a very basic level of Krishna consciousness, one will find that there's nourishment there for those who are functioning on a higher level. And I think all of us who've been engaged in Krishna consciousness for a long time have noticed this phenomena in the talks and in the writings of the Lord and all of the great acharyas, that they exist simultaneously on many levels. And as one's consciousness advances, one hears and understands things on many levels. I mean, just like there's no explicit reference to the resonance of Vrindavan in the Bhagavad Gita, but many of the acharyas, in commenting on verses of the Bhagavad Gita, will find, oh, Krishna's really talking about this thing in Vrindavan and so forth. But it's not just the level and the mood of the hearers and the chanters, but it's also the current mood, and that's what we're finding here with Vidura. So although Vidura's general mood is as a very intimate associate of Krishna himself, right now his current mood in this moment talking to Maitreya is that everything is very raw, we could say. And we find the same kind of inclination when the gopis say to Uddhava or to each other, well, let's not talk about Krishna. Krishna's gone to Mathura. Let's talk about something else. And so Krishna's just passed from this world. So although Vidura certainly wants to hear about Krishna, he doesn't want to hear about anything mundane. He's made that very clear. He wants to hear about Krishna in a way that's slightly removed from his intimate association, because his feelings are so intense at this particular moment. So we find this in the spiritual life among the pure devotees. There's what we call vyavichari bhavs. There's the moving of emotions and the changing of emotions. And sometimes the intensity of a particular emotion becomes too much. Just like when Krishna was enveloped in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, and it appeared, of course Krishna is not going to die, but it appeared that he was going to die in his human-like pastimes. And then Balaram, this is described, I believe, in Ananda Vrindavan Champu of Kavi Karnapur, Balaram says to the resonance of to Krishna, he says, my dear Krishna, these people are your associates in Vrindavan. They're not the monkeys in Ayodhya. They're not the resonance of Vaikuntha. He said, these people will not be able to bear this. He said, you have to stop this pastime and get out of the coils of Kaliya, because they're not going to be able to maintain their lives anymore. The intensity of their grief and their anxiety is getting too much. So this is the variety is the mother of enjoyment principle, that the devotee likes to move between different emotions, they're not just going to stay at the same emotion. They stay at the same relationship, but they don't stay at the same emotions. They want to move between them. Of course, all of these emotions are blissful. The grief, the fear is blissful, just like even in mundane rasa, we enjoy all of these different emotions. They give us pleasure, even the so-called negative ones. I've given this example many times, how in theater, movies, books, and so forth, we're getting just as much pleasure out of fear and anger and grief and so and as we're getting out of comedy and wonder. So what one talks about with Harikatha also depends on one's current mood, what one wants to listen to at that time, according to one's internal state. And that has to do with the company one's in, again, in their current mood. So when someone's hearing and someone's chanting, they're taking into account the level, the general mood, and the current mood. And then there's also the current need. What's going on at the present time? What are one's particular questions that one has in one's life? What are the particular issues that one is facing in one's life? And just like there's at least one time when at the end of a class, Prabhupada asked for questions, and someone asked a question on a very different topic. And Srila Prabhupada said, you should stick to the topic of the class. He said, otherwise there's no limit. We have the limit, the class goes on for a certain amount of time. So what are the particular needs in terms of that particular verse that one is speaking on, or what's going on in one's life? I personally find this to be a very important point, especially for those who are speaking. When we are speaking Harikatha, we should understand what are the needs of my audience or my group or my friends at this particular time. So what is troubling them even materially? So we have, in one sense, two kinds of needs. We have one's immediate material needs, and we also have one's immediate spiritual needs. And to most people who are materialistic consciousness, these things appear somewhat different. If we don't address these immediate material and spiritual needs in our choice of how we're going to present Harikatha, then we're not really going to be having something that is relevant and open to all people. We're not going to have something that people will really be open to hearing. And without that openness to hearing, our speaking will not be very effective. And this is, again, the principle of the offense of not preaching above one's level. So people are open to something that they feel they need. They're open to something that they feel is relevant to them. As I've given this example before, I had 5 years of French instruction when I was in school, and I really didn't learn how to read, what to speak of write, or how to speak, or how to understand French, because I didn't have a need to. I didn't really care. So although I was able to learn the language well enough to pass my exams, get a passing grade in the class, I can't say that I really learned it. And I'd have to say the same thing about higher levels of math. So I learned higher levels of math, up to calculus, up to statistics. But frankly, you know, because I don't have a need for it in my life, the only time I ever used higher levels of math was in my doctoral dissertation. And then I did most things on a computer. So it was, I didn't really need to do the calculations. And therefore didn't really stick. I mean, it's true, if I were to open up the book now and read again now, a lot of it would come back. But if you asked me right now, you know, what's the quadratic equation, I wouldn't be able to tell you, even though I taught such mathematics for years. So our ability to really imbibe and keep and listen with rapt attention to Harikatha depends to a large extent on to what extent what we're hearing is relevant to our own needs. And I believe this is one of the reasons why Vidura, before asking specifically for a particular type of discussion on a particular incarnation, talked about the benefits of hearing about the pastimes of the Lord. He talked about how it relieves all of our miseries. Right, let's look up through these other verses. What did he say? It will alone do good for all people all over the world. And he talks about the opposite. Otherwise, their duration of life is spoiled. Right? Again, all the miseries become vanished. That it will be the only thing that really satisfies you. So all of these points are to connect with people's real needs. I mean, when you're going to hear these pastimes of the Lord, you want to know why you're going to hear them. What good will they do for me? How will they help me? We are naturally very self-centered, and we're going to hear and be attentive to that, which is interesting to ourself. Of course, when one advances in Krishna consciousness, one understands that the self of the self is Krishna, and one takes this self-interest to its deeper and more authentic level. But knowing what are people's needs and how are people interpreting their life and connecting Krishna Katha to them is certainly very important. In order to do that, one has to be connected to oneself, honestly, and one has to be connected, honestly, to the person to whom one's talking or to the person with whom one's talking. And that may sound like an obvious thing, but my experience is that most people who talk about Krishna Katha don't make even an effort to connect what they're talking about to people's material and spiritual needs in that moment. They just figure any topic about Krishna is a topic about Krishna, and, you know, I'll just talk about it. Or this is the verse for today, I'll just talk about it, without connecting it to what people really care about. The problem is that if you do that, people will end up hearing mundane topics, hoping that the hearing of mundane topics will meet their needs. And we see this trend increasingly among devotees, that devotees of Krishna are convinced theoretically that only talks about Krishna will meet all their material and spiritual needs. But unless those talks of Krishna are presented in a way that explicitly connects those topics to their needs, they don't know how to make the connection themselves often, and so they go elsewhere. In order to have our topics connected to the needs we're feeling at the moment, whether on a material or spiritual level, we need to be aware of what those needs are with ourself, which requires some introspection. It really requires some honesty with oneself. We have a lot of verses in the Bhagavatam about this introspection, the introspective sage, the honest person, how to become honest and introspective. Sometimes we're so busy running around working for Krishna that we don't take the time, we don't put the energy into introspection. In which case, Krishna will sometimes, how should we say, externally take away our ability to be busy. Give us some accident or some disease or put us in some situation where nothing's happening. And Krishna will sometimes externally slow us down so that we need to look within and understand what are our real needs, what are our real concerns, what are our real doubts, which if they don't become surfaced and dealt with, will eventually eat at us. So this is a matter of deep introspection and prayer. And then we should be aware of what other people are asking. What are their actual questions? What are their actual doubts? You know, we don't want to see what our real needs and questions and doubts are out of our own pride and fear. And that same pride and fear often prevents other people from being explicit about it. So it's very rare that people in a class or in some kind of public format will talk about what's really bothering them. I just got an email recently from a very good friend of mine with a kind of heavy concern. And it was the sort of concern where I didn't really have an answer. It was a material need. And my friend wanted to know, what is the Krishna conscious solution to this material need? So I wasn't really able to provide a solution. I wrote back and said, I really don't know. You know, this is what you can try for, but I really don't know the answer to it. I thought about it and prayed about it for a long time. I didn't have a good answer. And my friend wrote back and said, it's nice even that I can discuss this with somebody else. It's nice that I can be honest with somebody else. And I can't imagine this person ever bringing up this concern in a public forum. So how are we as teachers, or if we're just speaking to people individually, how are we going to know their real needs materially and spiritually if they're not likely to be very open about them? And again, without knowing them, our preaching is not, and our speaking is not going to be relevant. It's not going to be accepted by them. So the only solution is deep relationships of love and trust. There really is no other solution. I mean, we can talk about techniques and so forth as taught in the mundane world, but they only go so far. We really need to have real relationships with people. We need to have authentic dealings with our own heart and authentic dealings with others in order to know what people are actually crying about, what they're actually bewildered about, or what they're actually relishing. And then our own choice of what part of Krishna Katha to speak about and how to present it, how to package it, will be in a way that is beneficial, one of the five austerities of speeches. So this is one of the elements of knowledge, to know time, place, and circumstance, and to be able to apply it. It's one of the qualities that Krishna demonstrates, knowing time, place, and circumstance, and knowing how to apply things to time, place, and circumstance. Otherwise, interesting that even talking about Krishna could be an offense to Krishna. To say the wrong thing about Krishna at the wrong time to the wrong person, even though it's about Krishna, might end up being an offense. It might end up being preaching the glories of the Lord to the faithless. Or it might at least be, if not an offense, it might be something just within the modes of nature. You may notice that in the descriptions in the 17th and 18th chapter of the modes of nature, one of the elements that differentiates ignorance from passion and goodness is wrong time and place and person. So in goodness and passion, one does the right thing. In passion, one does the right thing for the wrong motive. And in ignorance, one does the wrong thing. But making it the wrong thing may simply be that it was the wrong place, or the wrong time, or the wrong person. So charity is a good thing, but if you give charity to the wrong person, or you give it to the right person, but at the wrong time and the wrong place, then it is without respect, it's without love, it's without care. So to be very acutely aware, we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very acutely aware of time, place, and person. Just like when he first met Ramananda Roy, he embraced him, and then he could pick out, oh, wait a minute, you know, Ramananda Roy and I, we're having this intimate relationship as Krishna in Radha's mood with Vishakha, but these Brahmanas around here, they don't understand what we're doing, and they're not responding very well. So this is not the appropriate time. And there's so many, not the appropriate person, so many instances in Chaitanya Lila where the Lord is adjusting his speaking and adjusting his mood according to the time, place, and circumstance. So here Vidura is asking about the Purusha avatars, Yakara Narnava Jalei Bhajatisma Yoga Nidra Mananta Jagadanda Saroma Kupa Adhara Shakti Mavalambya Paramaswamurtim Yasyaika Nisvati Takala Matavalambya Jivanti Loma Vilaja Jagadanda Nata Vishnu Mahansa Yayasya Kala Visesha. So he's asking for the talk about the three Purusha incarnations, the incarnations of the Lord with all potency that create this material world. And one reason is his own internal mood, his own internal desires. And another reason is that Vidura is aware that this Bhagavatam is going to be studied. How amazing. This Bhagavatam, these answers are going to be studied for thousands of years in all different circumstances. And we are going to need to know, how did this world get here? What is the nature of the world? How was it created? Who created it? What is the purpose of the creation? And what is my role in the creation? Not simply, we don't simply need to know about Krishna eating laglus with the cowherd boys in the forests of Vrindavan. So thank you very much. If anyone has questions or comments.
The topic that you brought up about speaking in a relevant way to our audience, I don't know even really the value of this comment, but it is relevant in the sense that Ramananda and I had a conversation recently. We were talking about expanding the scope of our sangha, or at least expanding in terms of the numbers of participants. And then that conversation went to, okay, well, what audience are we looking for? Are we looking for devotees that are, you know, within our society, are the already seasoned devotees? Are we looking for new people? And then that gets in exactly what you're talking about. If a new person, a Sunday feast guest that just came from the university that wanted to learn a little bit about the Hare Krishnas, if he listened to this morning's Bhagavatam class, I don't know how much he would have gotten out of it. So it's a quandary. I mean, we got a tremendous amount out of it, but you know, where do we go with our Bhagavatam classes and our audience in terms of expanding? Prabhupada's Bhagavatam classes are so, because they spoke on many levels, but generally they seem, in one sense, basic. They were easy for anyone to understand, but it seems that most of the Bhagavatam classes around our society, here in this Sangha and Alachua, etc., that they're on a relatively lofty level that may be difficult for a new person. So anyway, I don't know where I'm going with this, but it was interesting that we had that conversation. Well, what are we looking for in terms of expanding for our preaching work?
It is a very interesting thing. Of course, Prabhupada's Bhagavatam classes to devotees were generally on a higher level than his public lectures. And we see this, you know, in our society, that our morning Shastra classes are generally on a higher and deeper level than, say, our Sunday feast classes. I know one preacher in the world that as soon as there's a new person in the audience, directs everything to that new person. And I'd have to say at the expense of everybody else. I'd say it's really an art to learn how to reach all levels simultaneously. At the same time, if you have a majority of new people, or if your venue is all new people, then you definitely adjust. I mean, I adjust a lot of my language. If I'm going to be speaking to people completely new to Krishna consciousness, who didn't even come to the class to hear something exactly about Krishna consciousness. I mean, this happened to me. I was giving a class to people in a naval academy, I forget in what country of the world this was, about how to have peace instead of worry. So, of course, I brought a lot of Krishna consciousness into it, but they weren't coming to a lecture to hear about Krishna specifically. You know, at the same time, there were devotees in the audience who said to me afterwards, wow, there was a lot of stuff I could use here in my life. So that the art of trying to present things that have many levels of benefit, you don't want the seasoned, when you said seasoned devotees, I was wondering if somebody, you know, sprinkled oregano on me. But the seasoned devotees, or does that just mean we've been through a lot of winter, spring, summer, or fall? I don't know. At the same time, the seasoned devotees want something, at least sometimes, that's explicitly a deeper, because they have deeper questions and deeper needs at that point in their life. You know, in fact, just the other day I was speaking with one seasoned devotee who said that he stopped giving classes in a particular venue because the questions after 10 years were still very elementary. And he wanted to have conversations with people who are functioning at a deeper level. Anyway, it is a very good question And I think that most of us need to learn the art of hearing and speaking on many levels simultaneously. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Oh, Mahalakshmi from the flooded Mayapur, right?
Yes, in Gada. Here is better connection.
I'm amazed you could even get online. So how may we serve you?
When I was listening at reading of this mantra and purport, of course I have not read before and after this text, but I felt maybe it was because Vidura was so overwhelmed with grief about Krishna's having departed from the world, and therefore he, since he was feeling pain, could not, maybe I was thinking, maybe that's why he was not ready to hear about his personal activities. But then listening at your lecture, I see that, well, he was concerned also about future generations. I don't know if you can develop this.
Yes, both things were going on simultaneously. His own inner mood and his concern for the fact that what was being spoken was not just between him and Maitreya. It wasn't just a personal conversation. It had a broader audience, and it had a huge audience over a long period of time. You know, that point is something that I grappled with in giving lectures that are recorded, which complicates the audience, you know, by at least hundreds or thousands of times. I remember when I first went to Australia, my first visit, and one lady came up to me and said, who I'd never seen before in my life, and said, "I really enjoy hearing your classes." And it struck me that when you're recording your classes, you don't really know who your audience is in time and space. You know, that you're not just speaking to the people in the room. You know, I might have a private conversation. You know, you and I have spoken, just the two of us, when it's not recorded. And that's very different from speaking to an audience that you're in that has 100 people. And what to speak of speaking to an audience that has 100 people and is going on the internet. You know, like, I'm speaking in Mayapur and there's 100 people sitting in front of me, and then there's another 100, 200 people listening over the internet. And then it's being recorded and it's being put on different sites, and so many other people are listening at a different time in their lives. And wow, you know, how do you do that? How in the world do you decide what part of Krishna Katha to speak on, and so forth? So this is also Vidura's concern, because although there weren't recorders in those days the way we use them now, here it is. Here's their conversation that we're reading, that we're hearing about. Not only are we reading and hearing about this conversation, you know, wow, we're going out on the streets and giving it to meat eaters and beer drinkers. That's even more amazing. You know, we're taking these Bhagavatams out to the airports and giving them to drunken sailors. And that's also, I thought about that, especially with Chaitanya Charitamrita. In my opinion, the most intimate esoteric books that Srila Prabhupada translated were the Anchalila to Chaitanya Charitamrita, and perhaps the Nectar Devotion. And we were out there, you know, again, at the airports, to people who were meat eaters and intoxication takers and illicit sex engagers and gamblers. And, you know, they're breaking all four principles. And we're giving them these books about, you know, wow, about Lord Chaitanya's ecstasies of Krishna with the gopis. And, So that's also there, that by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati specifically, his path of attaining Raghunuga Bhakti was the printing press and the preaching. And we're doing that, and we're doing it to people, with people in general. How amazing. So how does one take all these considerations at once? I think in these situations, we really just have to say, Krishna, use me as an instrument and speak through me and do the best we can with the audience at hand, with some consciousness when it's recorded, that the audience at hand isn't our only audience. I mean, there's certain times where there's things I will specifically say or not say just because something's being recorded. So thank you. Anybody else?
Yeah, thank you, Mother. What a wonderful class and very wonderful discussion on this specific topic that also Narahari Prabhu brought. How do we actually solve this dilemma? It's like you were talking a lot on that speaker has to connect with audience, and also listener has to be connected with speaker. And it sounds like almost impossible task, because so many speakers and such a different audience can be. And also, if I can bring it up, the same like question I had a few classes ago to you, you know, with that note that was Gopi Pranandananda had on his wall, that we shouldn't listen from the people that we don't have a perfect conduct. So that's another thing, you know, like on certain level, you know, maybe you just start becoming picky, very picky about the speakers, and then, but then on another hand, it can be maybe your pride infused. So I heard a very interesting solution that, and simple and very interesting, that we're doing in Russia. And Bhaktivedanta Swami, he wanted to also, he was addressing this question. So they decided to do experiment in a Brahmachari ashram in Russia, and they said that he said that you should try actually listening Bhagavatam class or Krishna Katha. First of all, we have to do this as a service for Krishna, just like chanting is a service for Krishna. So with that beginning, is everything changes, because as if we're doing as a service, then we hear things that we have to hear from whatever speaker it would be, whoever speaker he is, advanced or even a beginner devotee. So what we did, the audience before the class, devotees were praying to Krishna that we would hear something, that we would, Krishna would let a speaker would to say something that we actually need to hear. Everybody individually. So we were praying, and the speaker was praying before the class that he would be able to deliver something also useful to the audience. And they were surprised for the results. The speaker was saying that I never knew I can speak like that. I felt that Krishna speaking through me. Anyway, so we keep practice like this, and I thought it's very interesting.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Thank you. That's lovely. Anybody else?
Yes, I have something. This is a question I've asked a few times, various people. I don't think that I've asked this in any of your classes. If I did, forgive me. I've been in a situation, I remember one time very intensely, where I was really hurt and I wanted to reveal my mind to someone, but that person didn't want to hear me like complaining about other devotees, you know, how I was hurt. And so I felt hurt because of that. And then I also got in situations where other devotees wanted to reveal to me, you know, how they were hurt by such and such in such and such circumstances. So as far as meeting the needs of the audience or the person, you know, that's come to you, when you get in a situation like this, when somebody wants to pour out their heart about how they've been hurt, the other side of it is that if you hear such things, then you yourself become vulnerable to like getting drained or even hearing, you know, bad things about other devotees. So how do you deal with the needs of the person that wants to, I don't want to say dump.
but that's what they are doing.
Okay.
I finally got an answer to this question a few years ago at the camp in Croatia from Bir Krishna Swami, because there's a good friend of mine who's a counselor as a profession. She's a counselor out in the world. And she one time said to me, "Urmila, don't ever call me in the evening." She said, "If you need to contact me in the evening, have it be by email, because in the evening I can't tolerate hearing another human voice." He said, "All day long I've been hearing human voices dumping their stuff on me." And I thought, that's awful. You know, that's really terrible. Your profession of helping has drained you to the point that in the evenings you don't want to talk to other people. So how to do this? Well, the first thing is that we should train devotees that one of the austerities of speech is beneficial. That revealing your mind in confidence is giving a gift. It's parallel to giving prasadam and giving gifts. My son and his wife are about to celebrate their 20th wedding anniversary. My daughter's arranging a little get-together, and some devotees have written and asked, what gift can I give them? So, like someone said, I could give some china things, and I said, well, they have little children, that they'll just get broken, it wouldn't be a very good gift. So when you give a gift to somebody, you try to give a gift that's going to please the receiver. You know, people, what do they want? Same when you give food, when you give prasadam. You want to give prasadam. I mean, when I travel, people will ask me, what do you like to eat? What can you eat? Do you have a special diet? You like to give prasadam that people are going to enjoy. And frankly, it's the same with giving confidences. Of the three, giving gifts, giving food, and giving confidences as a gift seems to be the least understood. So it is true that many times we give a gift and give food just to please ourselves, not to please the receiver. But in giving confidences, I think it's much more of a problem. That I'm revealing my mind in confidence not to bring joy to you, but to use you. To use you as my garbage can or as my toilet bowl. You know, I'm carrying around something. And just like sometimes people give a gift to the temple of an old broken car, you know, so they get a tax write-off. They just want to get rid of this thing. So we have stuff lying around we don't want anymore. It's a burden to us. It's ugly. And we give it to someone not because it will benefit them, but just so we can get rid of it. So we can get some benefit for ourselves. So we should not engage in such speech. Such speech is not even in the mode of goodness. If we're speaking about our problems, if we need help with something, it should be presented in such a way that will benefit others. So how do we do that? Well, first of all, we should actually want a solution. Many times people talk about their problems not because they want a solution, but because they want someone to say, oh, poor you, you're just a victim, how terrible, the other person is a demon. And that doesn't benefit ourselves or the other person at all. So when we want to open our mind in confidence, we should do so because we want to really solve the problem either at an external level or an internal level. And we have to be open to some introspection. So we need to train the devotees to speak like that. We need to train the devotees that revealing their minds in confidence and asking for solutions and should be done with that in mind. I mean, a year or so ago, I read this book called The Squeaky Wheel about complaining. And the author was bringing up the point that many times, especially in the modern world, we're complaining just as a release valve, and we're not really complaining trying to solve the problem. And therefore, we complain to the wrong persons, we complain in the wrong way, and so forth. So if we're finding that someone's doing that to us, first of all, we shouldn't do that to others. We should be careful as a complainer and as a revealer of one's mind to always think about that, what we're really giving something to the other person, that we're not takers, we're supposed to be givers. And the other thing is, if we're on the receiving end and someone gives us an inappropriate gift, well, what do you do if someone tries to give you an inappropriate gift? What do you do if someone gives you food that you can't eat? Either you just take it and give it to somebody else, or you don't take it. And you try to see some good intention in the other person. When I was 6 years old, I got, I don't know, five or six sets of red tights, like red stockings, as gifts. I don't know, I must have had a sale. And when I got the fifth or sixth set, I was only 6 years old, you know, I didn't behave very nicely. And my mother took me aside and said, even if you get a gift you don't want, just say thank you, we'll return it later. So to receive graciously. At the same time, if it's something that's not really beneficial for yourself or the other, to deflect it, and see the inner good. And this is what I learned at the camp in Croatia, to see the inner good, to focus on the inner good, to deflect the external. And deflect the external may mean that you say, you know, I'm really not the appropriate person to speak to about this. I understand that you're in pain, but I can't do anything about this. These people will not listen to me. I'll not be able to solve this problem. I suggest, and then give them a suggestion. Deflect it somewhere. These are the people that you can talk to. This is people who will help you. And then connect with their inner need. You know, what's their inner need? Their inner need is for maybe connection. Maybe their inner need is for communication, for understanding, for respect, for authenticity. You find all of those needs are ultimately spiritual. The things that are driving the problem are something spiritual. They're a part of the soul. They're a part of the spiritual world. Find that. Find what's hidden there. Just like George Harrison wrote in the Introduction to Krishna book, everyone's looking for Krishna. Some don't realize that they are, but they are. And Prabhupada talks a lot in the preface of the Nectar Devotion and in his lectures on the Nectar Devotion, how everything that everyone is doing is for the purpose of experiencing rasa with Krishna. But we're doing it in the wrong way by trying to have that rasa separately from Krishna, with Krishna's external energy. But the urge is to have that rasa with Krishna. That's what's driving things. So what's driving the question, what's driving the angst, what's driving is some looking for Krishna. And connect with that. Sometimes you can't even connect with it overtly. Sometimes if you overtly say to the person, well, I can understand that you're just trying to enjoy Karuna Ras with Krishna. You're trying to enjoy grieving. You're trying to enjoy sadness. The person may become angry, but at least you can understand that and you can connect with that. But this is a very brief explanation. I don't know if you'll be able to apply it with such a brief explanation, but I found that when I do that, that my dealings with others are enlivening, even if their problems are horrific and even if I have absolutely no solution materially or spiritually to their problems. So I think we will end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.